All right. Y'all, and welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys, a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. I'm Dorian, and Max is usually with me, but we are a little off schedule this week. Couldn't record a new episode for you. Fortunately, we have one from the vaults from before we even had a name for this podcast. It's a pretty good one. Usually Max is the one educating me on some death topic. And in this episode, I teach Max about a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, Floridian death metal. Just a warning up top, this is a very brutal episode, and I'm not just saying that because that's a metal thing to say. We talk about some kind of disgusting things. So as long as you're not too squeamish, go ahead and listen and enjoy. How's it going, Max?
Not too bad, Dorian. How's it going on your end?
Pretty good. So I had a question.
Uh-huh.
You sent me a pretty hilarious image this week, a screenshot from your phone.
I did.
You got a notification on your phone that informed you that you will die.
I did.
You care to explain this notification?
So 5 times every day, I get a push notification that just tells me, hey, remember, you're going to die. I don't even think it says eventually. I think it just says you will die. It's an app called WeCroak. Give me some money, WeCroak.
Yeah. Sponsor us, I guess.
But it's cool. It's like, or in Bhutan, they believe that to be truly contented, you have to think about the fact that you'll die.
Okay.
And they say it should happen 5 times a day in order to help you enjoy life to the fullest.
Oh, okay. 5 times a day.
Yeah.
Do you worry about that getting you down, just putting you in a bad mood or anything like that?
Not particularly. Makes me more aware of it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's weird to get to feel my phone buzz in my pocket and then go, oh, that's the notification that tells me that I'm going to die.
Just in case you forgot. All right, well, speaking of death, that's what we talk about every time we sit down and record.
Got a because four, we're, four so far.
Yeah, because we're a jovial bunch. Today, I took the reins with the research. And by research, I mean I just sat and listened to a lot of music that I listened to in high school over and over again and read a lot of articles and interviews with said musicians. So there are some genres of music that are especially morbid, right? They focus a lot on morbid things.
Your goth
yeah,
stuff.
About death. But yeah. Arguably, no genre of music focuses on death quite as much as death metal. Am I right or am I right?
I would have imagined that would be correct.
Well, the studies are inconclusive.
If you get the genre named after your kind of outlook, then you're pretty set.
Yeah, you know what's in store.
Yeah.
Right, you know what's coming. My personal experience, Max, did you have maybe a piece of art or music that you encountered as a kid? Maybe, I think some people, it's like Disney movies really inspire them the first time they see it.
A piece of art that inspired me?
Yeah, just something like that sticks out in your memory.
I mostly played a lot of video games,
okay.
But I remember the first time I listened to The Mountain Goats, and that felt really foundational to me.
Okay. Probably shaped your worldview in some way, right?
Yeah, Y2K was big.
Yeah, do you ever have this moment where you look back on those things, like maybe old Mountain Goats music that you encountered as a youngster, and you connect the dots, and you're like, oh, that explains so much about who I am today.
I have done that.
All right. Well, I found one of those critical moments. For me, it was perusing my dad's CD collection and seeing albums by Iron Maiden and Dio and Cannibal Corpse and just all kinds of things.
Oh, that's crazy, actually.
Yeah.
Once I found a Ryan Adams album in my parents' house, and I was like, whoa, I didn't know my parents were cool enough to listen to Ryan Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Which is arguably the least cool musician.
Ryan Adams is cool.
But yeah, I mean, my dad was a metalhead and was in a few bands growing up, so he was pretty cool. But yeah, I just saw, you know, these very visceral, gory, crazy, intense paintings. Yeah, I think looking back over this stuff, it kind of reminded me, yeah, these are my roots. This is why I'm such a weirdo. And
a couple chords struck.
Yeah, it just made sense.
A couple blast beats of the heart, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, it was kind of a treat revisiting this stuff, and I figured I'd tell you about some of my findings over the years and over the past 24 hours of clicking through Wikipedia.
Well, that's awesome. I get really hyped when people share things, so I'm very excited to get into this.
Yeah, we'll take the workload off of you. If you're listening, Max is like basically the guy who does the bulk of the work of researching these things that we're talking about, and I just kind of sit here and crack jokes and pick my butt and am generally not helpful. But today I'm helpful.
Today you're being very helpful.
All right.
If we're going over death metal, I mostly only listen to like wimpy indie rock. So.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And hey, maybe you're not going to like a lot of the stuff that we talk about or listen to, but you know, different strokes.
Different strokes.
I literally don't know the rest of that saying.
For different folks.
Oh, I knew that part. Never mind.
There's
okay.
More?
Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about something I do know at least a little bit about. The roots of death metal are essentially in the same place as a lot of other subgenres of metal.
Uh-huh.
The big umbrella term is usually extreme metal. So you're starting to move away from your Black Sabbath, your
Pantera.
Pantera is later. but you have your proto-metal, right? The early stuff that's kind of like bluesy.
Judas Priest and
even earlier than that. Where okay. You got like Motorhead and even bands like Led Zeppelin where, you know, they're heavy rock,
yeah,
but they don't quite have a lot of the tropes of metal, a lot of the same sounds
okay.
And
yeah.
Ridiculousness. So there's kind of a gap to bridge between that early stuff. When you listen to Black Sabbath, it doesn't sound quite like Cannibal Corpse.
It's very true.
Well, my goal is to flesh that out, flesh that gap a little bit. If that was gross to you to hear that, just you wait.
Just, yeah. I feel like I'm going to read some things that I'm going to be uncomfortable with in a few here.
And just as a little bit of a preface, when it comes to creative things, art and entertainment, everybody's got their opinions about what is and is not in a genre or category.
Uh-huh.
And I have found that this is most true when it comes to metal, that people get very, very particular about categorizations. I'm not going to pretend to be the be-all, end-all authority, but I'm going to break it down in a way that makes sense to me and, like, I think is sensible to the listener and people who know the music. But there's always somebody on a Reddit thread, like, that's ready to kill you if you accidentally call something black metal when it's not.
Yeah.
But the way I would break down is a lot of extreme metal can be traced back to this band, Venom. And Venom is this band from England. They are kind of credited as the early pioneers of extreme metal, especially black metal.
Okay.
Namely, they have a song called Black Metal.
Okay.
And it is from their album titled Black Metal. So, if you're wondering where the term black metal comes from, that's probably pretty conclusive. You know, that's where a lot of extreme, outright Satan worship and violent lyrics and talking about just getting high on drugs and killing things.
Disembowelment.
Yeah, they pioneered a lot of that, so they're kind of a consistent root of a lot of these extreme genres of music.
Okay.
A lot of people widely consider the first extreme metal album to be Seven Churches by a band called Possessed.
Okay.
And Possessed was a Bay Area, California band.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which will come into play in a little bit. These bands kind of pioneered extreme metal. The commonalities with all extreme metal subgenres, you got fast tempos, right? You got these wicked fast songs. So fast.
I've never heard a speed metal ballad.
Yeah. Well, you do have your slow, sludgy stuff.
Yeah.
But that doesn't come until later. You mentioned Pantera. That groove metal thing kind of comes up in the 90s and 80s a little bit. But yeah, generally speaking, you have these fast tempos, shouted or growled or screamed vocals.
Uh-huh.
There's not really much concern in extreme metal for catchy melodies, you know?
Yeah.
While Black Sabbath will have something kind of melodic, a melody that you can track throughout the song, a lot of extreme metal doesn't really seem to care for that. And the lyrics, of course, focus on morbid subject matter. So the biggest three subgenres, the permutations of extreme metal, I would categorize as thrash, black metal, and death metal.
Okay.
And what's interesting is these not only have some individual characteristics, they also kind of have a primary location associated with each one of them. There was like a,
that makes sense.
A big scene.
Yeah,
that was kind of tied specifically to that movement. And there's some overlap of sound characteristics and lyrical content. Yeah. There's also, you know, these locations are not absolute. Yeah. There's some crossover, but generally speaking,
hey, crossover thrash.
Hey, there you go. Somebody here is true. So with thrash, that was mostly concentrated in California, especially Los Angeles and up in the Bay Area.
That's why you get Metallica playing the national anthem at San Francisco Giants baseball games.
Exactly.
Which is the goofiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer are all from Los Angeles area.
Uh-huh.
You also have Testament, which is widely considered one of the big main thrash bands, early thrash bands. They're from Berkeley. And of course, thrash existed everywhere else to some degree. Anthrax is usually lumped in as one of the big main four thrash bands, and they're from New York. Thrash kind of has some connections to punk and hardcore and a lot of similar elements. And if there is a most common lyrical theme, it tends to be somewhere between anti-authority kind of political content and just getting real drunk with your friends.
Yeah.
Now that's a sweeping generalization, and there's
going from like municipal waste to
absolutely municipal waste
and
is
justice for all.
Yeah, municipal waste is like a very recent example of like party
thrash
metal. Yeah, they've tried to just distill it down to party thrash, and that's why they are amazing. You do have some overlap with other genres. Like when we get to death metal, there's kind of a crossover between death metal and thrash metal, and that's kind of where grindcore sits.
Okay,
and grindcore is just kind of the most fast, most indiscernible vocals, most sloppy playing.
Discordant axis.
Yeah, and just overly gross lyrical content. It's great. By contrast, up in Scandinavia, you have black metal.
Uh-huh.
Black metal was heavily concentrated in Norway. You get bands like Mayhem, Darkthrone, and Gorgoroth. All of those bands have cited as an influence this band Bathory from Sweden.
Okay.
So there's a very Northern European concentration that makes up black metal. And black metal focuses way more frequently on Satanism, anti-religion. Again, there's overlap with other genres, but that tends to be it. And there's much more of an emphasis in black metal historically on being true, whether it's true to Satan or true to anti-religious viewpoints.
Now,
or
is that T-R-U-E or is it like T-R-U umlaut E?
It has been stylized and kind of become part of the metal culture where you spell it T-R-V-E to get that like Nordic rune look.
Yeah.
You know, people will also say cult in the same way.
C-V-L-T.
Yeah. True cult is like the most black metal you can get. Now, that's kind of a recent thing where it's internet culture has kind of grabbed hold of that. Yeah. And it's sometimes joking, sometimes not. But even in the early black metal days, there was a lot of criminal activity from these central bands in the movement.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking arson, church burning, murder, cannibalism, and I'm really hoping that we get to talk about that in a future episode.
Just a cannibalism episode.
Well, that and, you know, black metal and all of the crazy things that those kids did up in Norway. But the reason that was given by a lot of these guys for why they did such extreme activity was that they were being true to the genre, that other people were just posers, they were false.
You're trying to talk the talk and walk the walk.
Exactly.
W-V-L-K.
The Volk.
The Volk.
And then, finally, we have death metal. And death metal is concentrated, for the most part, in Tampa, Florida. So
really?
Many metal bands come, death metal bands specifically, come from Florida.
Huh.
If you wouldn't mind, I thought it'd be good to kind of open up with a list of bands from Tampa, specifically.
Okay.
So, if you could just go ahead and read this list, maybe, like, if you can put on a metal voice, that would be kind of entertaining to me.
entertaining to you?
Or just something dark and brooding, you know?
I gotta get into, like, my D&D character thing here.
Talking like this.
Well, you don't have to do the, like, brutal death metal growl, but just do something evocative of, like, a serious sort of tone.
Dark tone?
Yeah.
Obituary.
Hell yeah.
Morbid Angel, who produced the Mountain Goats album, actually.
No way, really?
Yeah, they produced a few songs off of a Mountain Goats album.
God, they're awesome.
Deicide.
Correct. Nice.
Atheist. Hate Eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Monstrosity.
Yes.
Nocturnus.
Mm-hmm. Asheron.
Asheron.
Yeah.
Asheron. You would think that my JRPG influence and D&D would show through there, but it didn't.
All right, can you get that last one there for me?
Ah, Asuk is, I believe, what is written down here.
Yeah.
Asuk.
Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it. But it definitely does look like ass suck, and that's why I wanted you to read it, because I just wanted to see if you'd say that.
Ass very good. Suck.
Yeah, so all of these are really well-established death metal bands that came specifically from Tampa, Florida.
Huh.
Also in Tampa, Florida, was a recording studio called Morris Sound, and it became kind of a destination spot for a lot of iconic releases from various extreme metal bands.
Okay, like your Abbey Road of death metal.
Yeah, essentially. Scott Burns was the producer there. He's widely regarded as a legend within the metal history. Now, Cannibal Corpse and Malevolent Creation are two other very, you know, seminal death metal bands.
Uh-huh.
And they both came from Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
So very I've opposite kind of. Yeah. However, Malevolent Creation actually relocated to Tampa a year after they formed. So they're basically a Tampa band anyway. And Cannibal Corpse's first singer was Chris Barnes.
Okay.
Chris Barnes had some issues working with the rest of the members of the band after a few years.
Uh-huh.
And he decided to move to Tampa and double down on his side project with Alan West, who's the guitarist of Obituary.
Okay.
A Tampa death metal band. And that band was called 6 Feet Under. Another really big death metal band.
Yeah.
So Tampa even becomes kind of a magnet for other death metal acts to kind of
draw people in.
That's, yeah, that's where it all kind of happened.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? I'll throw it to you. What do you think it is about Tampa, Florida that would generate, like, you know, you got the polar opposite being like Norway and Buffalo, like these cold, dreary places.
I was wondering that because being more in the punk scene myself and coming from that, I know Gainesville has Fest, which is a huge punk fest that happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assumed it was because like you could pretty much just like hang out with your friends all the time. And it wasn't like in Ohio where you were like, oh, I don't want to leave my house because it's 5 degrees outside and there's snow everywhere.
Yeah.
So you could just hang out and walk home or walk to your bud's house and carry your guitar and jam. I don't know.
The weather in Tampa is probably way more conducive to late night hangouts.
Yeah. Most people in extreme metal don't seem like they would be great drivers and would be more suited to like walking.
Now, what makes you say that? That sounds like a little bit of discrimination. Metalheads can't drive or?
I mean, when most of your songs are about shotgunning 40 beers in one go and then doing like massive amounts of drugs.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Or murder, you know.
Murder.
And you're driving this big 2-ton murder machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair point. I let my curiosity get the best of me and just kind of followed like a little bit of a research trail.
Yeah.
Here's some interesting little tidbits I found out about Tampa in the 1980s, which is when a lot of these bands formed.
Oh, like death metal Yelp.
Basically.
Quite.
There was kind of a sharp decline in population between 1970 and 1980. It was kind of the first in Tampa's history.
Huh.
Not really sure exactly what caused that.
Yeah.
But
people are moving out.
Yeah, but the populations in the suburbs stayed pretty much the same, especially in places like Temple Terrace, which is where Morris Sound was located.
Okay.
So for some reason, a lot of people are leaving the urban areas, but they're staying put in like those areas, which kind of makes sense. It's Florida. It's nice. You have a lot of people there for the beaches, which I found out there are over a dozen public beaches in Tampa's greater area alone. So it's big tourism.
One big beach, if you...
Well, it's kind of like a lot of beaches in a little sort of bay. I don't know.
I've been to Florida a couple times. I don't really understand it.
I don't get the appeal. There's also a lot of retirement homes. It's a lot of old people. I guess in my thought, maybe like you're around a lot of people who die on a regular basis.
You're thinking about death a lot.
I guess so. I don't know. Interesting to speculate on. Anyway. So that's death metal. It's in Florida, and death metal on the whole tended to favor technical proficiency of instruments, not just being as fast as humanly possible, or being noisy and loud as much as possible.
Just pick sweeping and cool guitar stuff.
Having intricate, sophisticated harmonies
and
stuff like that. And the lyrics tended to focus less on religion and politics, although that was you know, bands like Deicide, you could imagine, did not.
Yeah, they're not.
Deicide, God
not
Murder.
Shying away from that.
Yeah, they're very religion focused. But if death metal has a common through line, it's the focus on violence and gore and death.
Uh-huh.
So not even necessarily aligned with any political ideals or religion, just kind of talking about death.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the name.
Exactly. Let's get into some bands and some lyrics. Let's talk about the lyrical content of these bands. So the first song that I'm going to have you read the lyrics to, and you can read this in like a poet style, or if you want to do death metal voice, I leave it to you. You decide what mood you want to evoke.
I read a lot of kids' books to children when I'm at work, so I'll try and stick as close to that voice as I can.
Yeah, you can do a kid-friendly voice. Up to you. The first song we're going to read the lyrics to is called Immortal Visions by Obituary off of their album Slowly We Rot, their debut album. So go ahead whenever you're ready, Max.
Your soul, take mine, your time. Time, fighting it low. Yeah, you.
Yeah.
That's it. Did you
that's
did
it.
Did you leave anything out or?
That's it. There you go.
All right.
That's Obituary. What do you think? what's your assessment of the lyrics? What do you think of your first death metal lyric experience?
I mean, most of the bands that I listen to kind of fit pretty firmly in the talk rock genre, where you almost need footnotes to understand these obscure, like, English low league soccer references they're inserting in their songs.
Mm-hmm.
Although the Hold Steady did recently put out a song that had a Trapped Under Ice reference.
Oh, hell yeah.
I tweeted at Craig Finn from the Hold Steady, and then I asked, is this a Metallica reference or a reference to the band Trapped Under Ice? And he responded and just said both. Which makes me very happy.
The Hold Steady is secretly metal as fuck.
It's very, very cool.
Just like Mountain Goats. So, yeah, it's pretty simple. It's a little meat-headed, right? Just like, you, yeah, soul, soul.
Fighting it low.
Well, I don't even know what that means. Obviously, this lends itself really well if you're just kind of gargling words at a low tone of voice out of your mouth. This might be a stretch, but I kind of see a little bit, compared to other genres of metal, kind of see a little bit of like a almost philosophical core of trying to understand and kind of ponder what is it like to die and what is death like. And again, a lot of these other genres are just talking about atrocities committed and murders done. But something you'll kind of see that's interesting with death metal is like they're kind of interested in the inherent brutality of death itself.
It seems like it's very bleak and very blunt.
Yes. Bleak and blunt describes death metal to a T.
Yeah.
For sure. And the next set of lyrics we're going to read is from another Obituary song. My favorite Obituary song. It's called Chopped in Half. So before you read it, let's get an idea of what this music actually sounds like. Let's get a sample. So let's play a little bit of Chopped in Half by Obituary.
Chopped in half. Feel the flies build from your mouth. Rotting waves of destiny. Feel the stars hanging on.
What do you think?
I mean, the vocals are a little cleaner than what I imagined. Maybe it's just because it's early. It's growly, but the words are discernible.
Somewhat.
Yeah, I have the lyrics in front of me, and that helps.
I do love so much just that Chopped in Half became It's Chopped in Half. Fucking love it. So what do you think about the lyrical content of Chopped in Half?
So again, it's pretty brutal. If I was writing like a very overblown villain that I needed for a Final Fantasy game. I've actually never played Final Fantasy VII, but when I hear people talk about Sephiroth, this is what I imagine he says.
You chop it off. Sure, I could see that. I just love this song. It's very iconically death metal. And again, Obituary, not going to win any Poet Laureate awards or anything, but man.
No, but those blast beats.
They rock. That album is so good. So let's backpedal a little bit and talk about what is leading death metal to become a genre.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to pivot back out to thrash metal.
Okay.
Specifically Slayer.
Nice.
Slayer is arguably out of the big four, Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Slayer. Slayer is arguably the most close to death metal.
Yes.
The album Rain and Blood came out in 1986. Yeah, you know that album.
Sick.
It's hugely influential on so many death metal bands. You got your graphic, violent artwork and lyrics and a lot of the sort of tropes of death metal definitely present in that album.
Yeah.
A lot of people would categorize it as thrash. Some people would argue that and say it's death metal. It's in a weird middle ground where you see the overlap.
Yeah, a lot of red text on black artwork.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's dive into the song Angel of Death.
Oh, this is a good one. I like this song.
Yeah, you know this one?
Yeah.
It's a classic. What do you know about Angel of Death?
I know it's about Nazis.
All right. Well, go ahead and, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, go ahead and read the excerpt that I gave you there.
Auschwitz, the meaning of pain, the way that I want you to die. Slow death, immense decay, showers that cleanse you of your life. Forced in, like cattle, you run, stripped of your life's worth. Human mice for the angel of death. 400,000 more to die. Angel of death. Monarch to the kingdom of the dead. Sadistic, surgeon of demise. Sadist of the noblest blood. Destroying without mercy to benefit the Aryan race. Surgery with no anesthesia. Feel the knife pierce you intensely. Inferior, no use to mankind. Strapped down, screaming out to die. Angel of death, monarch to the kingdom of the dead. Infamous butcher, angel of death.
Almost wanted you to read that in your children's story time voice.
Infamous butcher, angel of death.
Angel. Yeah, so maybe,
you know, like people have a customer service voice. I have like a children's storybook voice.
Yeah.
I don't know where that.
Angel of death. How may I help you? Yeah. So this song is about Joseph Mengele, the guy who was enlisted by the Nazis to select prisoners in Auschwitz. Basically, he was responsible for picking off who would go and work in the camps and who would stick around and be experimented on and tortured and eventually killed.
Yeah.
It's not exactly uplifting stuff, huh?
No, not at all.
Yeah. What's interesting about the song and what's given it a lot of controversy over the years is that it's very violent.
Yes.
It's true, right? Yeah. You know, Joseph Mengele actually did these things and the Nazi regime actually perpetrated this violence. It's not really moralizing, is it? Is there anything in those lyrics that, like, condemns Mengele?
Not particularly. I mean, it does say that he's a sadist of the noblest blood, which is like a little.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could definitely read like, okay, maybe they're being sarcastic. Maybe Slayer is endorsing Nazism.
Yeah.
They don't really clear it up for you, do they?
No. Which is strange because I feel like I've heard that Slayer is pretty anti-fascist.
Well, their attitude was just kind of like almost blowing this off. In the wake of the negative press, one of their guitarists, Kerry King, kind of explained it's like a documentary. We're just reporting what actually happened up.
Yeah.
Which I think it's kind of comical. Maybe a little bit of a misunderstanding of what documentary is. But, you know, fair. He's making a case, right?
Yeah.
Kerry King was a little bit more of the outspoken guitar player between the two. Jeff Hanneman was much more soft-spoken, but no less rowdy and fun.
Yeah.
But here's a direct quote from him. Try and do my best Jeff Hanneman voice. When they read the lyrics, there's nothing I put in the lyrics that says necessarily he was a bad man. Because to me, well, isn't that obvious? I shouldn't have to tell you that.
I mean, that's a pretty fair point. Like, I mean, I don't know how, on the surface, how many people would be like, oh, that's a song about Joseph Mengele.
Right.
You know, but it's, you don't listen to this and go like, I should go out and do that.
Right.
You know, you're
exactly.
Like, oh, this is like a brutal, dark, gross person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So that sentiment of like, listen, we're going to write our songs. Yes, we're fixated on brutal things, but honestly, you should be able to figure out that this is extreme and that you shouldn't do it. We shouldn't be the authorities telling you what to do. That's kind of a philosophy that's held by a lot of metal musicians.
Yeah. Don't look to us as your role models, it seems like.
Right. And Cannibal Corpse, we'll get into that, and we'll get to them in a little bit. So, that's Slayer. That was from Rain and Blood, which came out in 1986. Inspired by that, Chuck Schuldiner, the frontman of Death, you know,
the band
honing
was just titled Death.
Yes,
that's sick.
Death is a band from Orlando, Florida. So,
the Magic Kingdom.
Yes, I don't know if Disney influenced their content or their creative direction at all, but Orlando is two counties east of Tampa. So different locations, yes, but they're probably playing the same venues. They're definitely, you know, there's a similar community between the two cities. So Chuck Schuldiner is the frontman there, and he cited Rain and Blood as a huge influence on his music.
Okay.
Rain and Blood came out in 1986, and in the following year, in 1987, Death released their debut album, Scream Bloody Gore.
Not even murder, they just went straight to gore there, huh?
Hell yeah. This is widely regarded as the first death metal album, and I'm inclined to agree. I think that if you're going to point to the first album recorded that got a wide release and is a actual representation of the genre, not kind of like indicating like where proto, the genre might be. Yeah. This would be it. I would put this CD in someone's hands and say, this is what death metal sounds like, and be confident that they would get it.
Yeah.
Death kind of began as an iconic death metal band. Again, fast tempos, screamed vocals, morbid lyrics. And as an example of one of those lyrics, I want to read two songs by Death. So if you could read the lyrics from a song called Denial of Life, this is off of the album Scream Bloody Gore.
Oh,
it's a real treat.
I feel like this is one where I'm going to need to crack open Coconut LaCroix. So waiting on that sponsorship, LaCroix.
Yeah.
All right. With the Coconut LaCroix in hand, here is Denial of Life by Death. In your dreams, the pain is so real. Before the dead, you'll have to kneel. Hear your future screams. See your epitaph. As you scream, the dead, they laugh. Pain growing stronger. Life exists no longer. Welcome to a world of pain, death, and despair. Denial of life, parenthetical, vile denial. Denial of life, denial of life.
All right. So that's just an excerpt. But I would argue again, these are violent lyrics, but again, there's that kind of philosophical bent to it of kind of trying to empathize almost, like, what is it like to die and to resist death?
Yeah, there's a sense of, like, going towards into death.
Right.
Pain growing stronger, life exists no longer.
Right, arguably more empathetic than Slayer, where it's just kind of matter of fact.
Yeah.
Am I crazy for thinking that? Is that a bit of a stretch? Am I reading too much into metal?
No, I mean, I think it describes the fact that there is pain here, and it's real, you know?
Yeah, it's not just kind of like, how tight is it, like peeling fingernails off this, stuff like that, you know? But we'll get to that.
Oh, God.
Cannibal Corpse is coming up. Before that, though, we're going to read what
Now, you're talking about Cannibal Corpse, and, like, this is coming up. A kid at work today came up and said, Mr. Max, my tooth is loose, and then wiggled her tooth, and I visibly shuddered and had to turn away.
Oh, no. Are you sensitive to blood?
I don't do
great
tooth stuff.
Oh, no.
It's just tooth stuff.
Just tooth stuff. All right. I don't think I put any tooth stuff in here. Before we get too brutal, though, I want us to get a little cerebral, a little philosophical.
Okay.
And so I want to read what I think is one of the most lyrically interesting death songs. This is off of their second album, called Leprosy.
Okay.
And the song is called Pull the Plug.
Memories is all that's left behind as I lay and wait to die. Little do they know that I hear their choice of life. End it now, it is the only way. Too cruel, that is what they say. Release me from this lonely world. There is no hope, why don't you pull the plug, let me pass away. Pull the plug, don't want to live this way. Once I had full control of my life. I now behold a machine decides my fate. End it now, it's all too late. What has now been days, it seems like years. To stay like this is what I fear. Life ends so fast, so take your chance and make it last. End it now, it is the only way. Too cruel, that is what they say. Release me from this lonely world. There is no hope. Why don't you pull the plug? Let me pass away. Pull the plug. Don't want to live this way.
There you have it. Pull the plug.
Pull the plug.
What's your assessment?
You said philosophical, and it reminds me a lot of the book Johnny Got His Gun by Dalton Trumbo, which is about kind of the fallout of war and soldiers kind of surviving in vegetative states after war.
Yeah.
That's actually what inspired the video for One by Metallica.
Yeah.
Where the guy's laying in his bed and he has no arms and legs. And
yeah, another really morbid song. But, you know, it's about the right to die.
It seems like they're like, they are aware of things that are happening in the world. You know, yeah. This would have been about the time of Kevorkian and the issues that Right to Die was having in the Northwest. It seems like they're at least kind of engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a very death positive song. It's not suicidal and totally abysmal. You know, there's the line, life ends so fast, so take your chance and make it last. There's an optimism about life when it is good.
Yeah.
But
that's not a way to live, to be in permanent pain and in a vegetative state.
Yeah. So again, death kind of drew a line and I think moralized, or at least opinionated about some things in a way that Slayer might not have, and a lot of other bands might not have. So there's a lot of depth to the lyrical content of death metal. And I think that we're kind of seeing, you know, in recent metal music, there's kind of a resurgence in the aesthetics of black metal and a lot of and maybe a lot of the guitar squeals and stuff, aesthetic things from death metal. But I think that this is a genre of music that, in my personal opinion, is very underappreciated in how there is some potent lyrical content that's worth wrestling with, and difficult issues are explored.
Yeah, it's not like you just write it off as vapid and pointless.
It is not the banal, totally stupid genre that I think a lot of people make it out to be.
Yeah.
For sure. Death had a lot of songs like this, but also a lot of just stereotypically
brutal
songs. And it's kind of interesting. They would develop into one of the more technical death metal bands later in their career, where they prize mastery of their instruments and really sophisticated arrangements and rhythms.
And I mean, normally I'm assuming these bands are drummer, two guitarists, bass player.
Invariably. Yeah. Sometimes one guitar player and a singer, something like that.
Okay, so not even rhythm, they're just doing full lead, just riffs on riffs on riffs, huh?
Kind of. Yeah, definitely just kind of smashing riffs together. It's very brutal. Just to illustrate the point a little bit, here's a song by Death. It's called To Forgive Is to Suffer. And I'm just going to play a few seconds of it just so you can get an idea of where death metal progressed when it got more technical and progressive.
Okay. So, two things.
Yes.
It must be exhausting to play in a death metal band.
For sure.
You would just be wiped after like three songs.
Right.
Two, you mentioned mastery of their instruments. I consider myself a pretty mathematical person and I listen to a lot of music.
Yeah.
And the time signatures here, things are switching up so fast that it's really impressive, you know?
Yes.
There's that switch that happens from the like into the first verse where it's like, oh, wait. Right. They're just playing at a completely different time, and that's really cool.
Yeah, so you have, not to get too, you know, inside baseball on this, but you have counterpoint, different melodies interacting with each other. You have tempo shifts and changes. You have just all kinds of bizarre drumming improv going on in the middle of these riffs, and it's still very tightly structured and organized.
Yeah.
You know, despite the kind of brutal sheen that this music tends to put off, a lot of it, especially late death and some of these bands, get so technically impressive.
Yeah.
That was the stuff that, you know, when I was in a metal band right out of high school, that was the stuff that I was like, yeah, really, that's what we should do. And then we tried to do it and absolutely could not. It's so hard.
I wonder how the songwriting process even goes with that, because I imagine it would be really weird to show up as the guitarist for Death and be like, hey, check out, I wrote a couple riffs, and it's like, I wrote this other one too. Check it out, here's another one.
Well, in Death's case, Chuck Schuldiner was the one consistent member of that band over the course of their existence.
Okay.
A little bit of a revolving door with him being the chief songwriter. So I don't really know how much other members of the band contributed to the songwriting process so much as he was just the director kind of telling people what to do and, hey, your solo's coming up.
It seems like you would almost need
that
if you didn't just come up with songs organically.
Right.
You know?
There is a tradition now of sophisticated arrangements in metal bands kind of being the work of one central musician and then a cast of musicians surrounding them. And, you know, they sometimes have a reputation for being a little bit of a diva. Yeah. Allegedly, Chuck Schuldiner was kind of difficult to work with, but accounts vary. In any case, rest in peace, Chuck. He died back in 2001. Yeah, he had brain cancer and eventually died from pneumonia. So, yeah. We all gotta go sometime.
You gotta go, yeah.
You're gonna die.
Sorry, Chuck.
Check your phone if you haven't. It'll tell you.
You'll get a push notification.
All right, so the last band that I would like to talk about is my personal favorite death metal band. Ooh. And probably the single most popular death metal band.
Okay.
You've probably not heard of very much death metal in your lifetime if you're not a huge fan of the genre.
Uh-huh.
But you have almost certainly heard of Cannibal Corpse.
Yes.
If you are a fan of music, you have encountered something about them just in the zeitgeist
or,
in some way, shape, or form.
Or if you're a fan of weed, maybe you've heard of Cannibal Corpse.
Right. Definitely, if you are a fan of Ace Ventura, you probably noticed that... Cannibal Corpse were playing their song Hammer Smashed Face in one scene.
Oh, so they actually, they didn't write a song for the movie. They were playing...
Yeah, that was off of one of their albums. I believe off of Tomb of the Mutilated, but don't quote me on that. Because I don't have the page in front of me right now. So, let's get an idea of who Cannibal Corpse is. I feel like you can glean a lot from their song titles.
Okay.
So, Max, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love for you to read that list of song titles that I made for you.
Oh, boy. Huh.
Yeah, go ahead whenever you're ready. Maybe the children's story time voice would be appropriate for this one.
I feel like that would almost be doing this a disservice. Although I don't really particularly feel like I would be doing a huge disservice to Meat Hook Sodomy.
Yes.
Or Necropedophile. Entrails. Come on.
You don't have to say that last word, I guess, if you don't want to.
Fucked with a knife.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah, what about it?
That's one of those that I know the government has gotten involved in.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the government has been like, hey, that's too far.
Well, a lot of governments outright banned the band from ever performing and releasing their music. Yeah, they had
You mean citizens of a country weren't allowed to hear I Come Blood?
No. They were really, you know, given the short end of the stick, I guess.
Seems like you should probably see your doctor on.
Yeah, a timely phrase when you're reading these song titles. All right, I won't make you read Entrails Ripped from a Virgin's on our podcast.
No. You gotta beep that one. I send these to my brother. Eventually is gonna hear it.
Oh, no. Well, we didn't write these songs. It's all Cannibal Corpse's fault. They've corrupted me. It's Dad's fault. Mom, if you're listening, it's Dad's fault. So, Cannibal Corpse was very controversial.
Uh-huh.
They were banned from performing in many countries.
And this is all pre-internet, right? So you could actually reasonably do that.
Right. And countless record labels were completely afraid to even touch Cannibal Corpse records.
Yeah.
Because especially they started to build a reputation just with how controversial they were.
Uh-huh.
They started to become the most recognizable and popular death metal band purely on shock value. You know, they're the only ones putting out albums with these songs like Fucked with a Knife.
Yeah.
While a lot of these bands like Death were violent, and if you dug into the lyrics, you could find out some gruesome things. They just laid it all out
there. Yeah, they were like, these are the track titles.
Exactly.
I've seen some Cannibal Corpse album artwork too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Oof. Funny enough, in Germany, they were actually not allowed to play the song Born in a Casket. That was too gruesome a song for them to play, but they were allowed to play Dismembered and Molested. So, it's all good.
All right, Germany, we got some...
Yeah, these censorship laws absolutely make sense.
So, if you were touring Germany, would they have to, like, write a set list out every night and submit it to some bureaucrat who had to follow them around?
That's a good question. I don't know how they regulated that. But, fortunately, the ban on their songs was lifted in Germany in 2006.
Wow.
So, pretty recently.
And that's like the internet, so it's almost like you're doing like some Silk Road dark web stuff to trade and get Cannibal Corpse songs off of LimeWire or BearShare.
Right. Fair, I think this was a ban just on their live performances of these songs.
Okay.
And it's funny because their singer at the time, George Corpse Grinder Fisher.
Yes.
Would just point out that this was ridiculous, and there'd be fans screaming the names of the songs, like, hey, play this.
Yeah.
Play Dismembered and Molested. And they'd be like, I'm sorry, we can't. Our hands are tied.
And, like, from what I know, he's a pretty cool guy, right?
Yeah, very, like, well-spoken, pretty chill. Yeah. the biggest neck I've ever seen of any man. Like, his neck is... God just blessed Corpse Grinder with the most muscly neck I've ever seen in my life.
Now, I'm going to take a bit of a baseball aside here. Is it bigger than Mike Trout's neck?
Now, Mike Trout has a big neck. But I want you to Google image search Corpse Grinder. All one word. I'm sure that's the first thing that'll come up.
Oh, it's a Google-suggested search result. Oh, no! So either my Chromebook is kind of like tracking what we say, and it's interpreting these into the search results, but the first result is Corpse Grinder Neck.
Dude, that's
the first autocomplete.
Well, that is a popular search term, frankly.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's no joke.
Wow.
It's the most brutal neck in metal.
That is a dense neck. People make fun of Mike Trout for being a thumb, and wow, this fella.
Oh, yeah. Also, Corpse Grinder, one of his favorite activities when he's on tour, do you know what it is? Shopping for deals at Target.
What?
That's true. You can find YouTube videos of him shopping at Target and just see him getting real giddy. I'll leave that for another time. The last thing that I would like
for
us...
Oh my god, he's holding a Guardians of the Galaxy branded Nerf gun.
He's a total sweetheart. Corpse Grinder is a sweetheart for sure. He's awesome.
Oh, man.
So, as you mentioned, Cannibal Corpse was known not just for their horrific lyrics, but also for their horrific album artwork.
Uh-huh.
And before we wrap things up, I would just like for us to take a moment. You know, I really appreciate, I think a lot of comedy came from...
Oh, you're going to get me back, aren't you?
Me describing the weird shit that you forced me to look at.
Oh, boy.
So, I figured we could turn the tables a little bit. So... I want you to just kind of describe for the listeners what you're looking at here.
Okay.
And don't worry, I don't think there's any teeth stuff.
Okay. So I haven't scrolled down yet.
Sure.
But I've looked at death metal albums before, and I know that reading kind of the title can be kind of like reading Cyrillic if you're not familiar with it. If there is kind of like the death black metal typeface on these, do you want me to take an attempt at reading that too?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that. I'm just going to show you three. I'm just going to keep it simple. I'm going to show you the first three Cannibal Corpse albums.
Okay.
So go ahead and take it away. The first one is from 1990.
Okay.
And it is the album Eaten Back to Life.
Oh, okay.
Describe what you're seeing there.
So the first thing that catches my eye is that this album got a parental advisory for explicit content, which means... Huh.
Weird.
This is an oil painting of a cemetery graveyard here. If you're familiar with Iron Maiden's Eddie character, that is his name, right? The little skull?
Yeah, Eddie the Head, yeah, for sure.
So it looks like Eddie, but he's attached to a full body, but not for long, because the full body of this zombie is pulling its own intestines out while also, like, kind of shattering its rib cage with its own hands. It's wearing jeans. So the skeleton is wearing jeans.
Are those Levi's, or...?
They look pretty nice. But there's also kind of, like, a lot of blood and particulate matter flying about. There appears to be a head on a kind of necklace that's hanging off of a tombstone in the back.
Oh, but Max, you're missing the most crucial detail. What's he doing with his own intestines?
He's eating them.
Yeah, he's eating himself back to life.
He's eating himself to feel again.
All right, well, we can move on. That's kind of a brutal album cover. The next one...
Is this trachea?
It's a biological nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder how much anatomical study went into this.
It's a total anomaly. I don't know if much went into it. Perhaps a little more went into their 1991 release,
okay,
Butchered at Birth.
Okay.
Could you go ahead and describe to me what you're seeing there?
Oh, no. So when you're scrolling down from top to bottom, kind of trying to think of an apt way to describe this... it does just appear to be a bunch of infants, hence the at birth, kind of dangling from a ceiling by, again, their intestines. I'm seeing a lot of intestine-themed kind of imagery here. While two emaciated lich doctors. I guess that's not a doctor's suit. They're butchers, probably.
Yeah.
Use very large butcher knives to flay and remove the intestines from a woman who is laying on a table. And there's a baby there, too.
Oh, there's babies.
There's a lot of babies.
Yeah. If you need more explanation, just look at the title of the album and let your imagination fill in the rest.
Yeah.
I don't want you to suffer for too long. So let's go ahead and look at our last album cover. This is from 1992.
Okay.
It's called Tomb of the Mutilated.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm just going to say, describe as much as you would like.
So in the lower right-hand corner, there's a skull, and he's got his eyes open, and he's surrounded by candles. This is a pretty not-safe-for-work album artwork. There is a sarcophagus-style, like some stone masonry in the background, where a couple is engaged in some oral sex.
Yes.
But
would you categorize them as a living couple?
I would not categorize them as a living couple. Interestingly, all three of these have gotten the parental advisory for explicit content.
Huh. Weird.
There was a Lamb Chop album, and Lamb Chop is a kind of a, they're an indie rock group.
Yeah.
And they got in trouble a couple years ago because one of their albums featured a couple making love on the front. And
yes.
Then they were in bed. And then there was a small window in the room. And outside of the window, there was a police officer beating just a citizen.
Right.
And they got in trouble because of, you know, the powers that be were like, you can't show sex on an album cover. And they were like, actually, the thing we find more offensive is that there's like a cop beating a citizen
right
on this. And no one's saying that. And this Cannibal Corpse is kind of like, they just took both those things that Lamb Chop was going for and just mashed them into one.
Let's get our violence and our sex explicitly
depicted.
Just up front.
We can't sell this album anywhere. Like, I feel like this album had to be sold in like a paper bag.
Yeah, essentially. I remember going into record stores and kind of seeing there's something in a paper bag.
Uh-huh.
And there being, you know, some places you can kind of peek in and see the album artwork a little bit. Oh, God, that's disgusting. Why did I look at it? The shock effect definitely works. And I think that's part of why Cannibal Corpse was so popular is because they just decided we're going to put it front and center and make this as brutal as possible and get attention. It's pretty wild stuff.
It's pretty crazy.
It's pretty brutal.
Did they get the same artist on all these?
Yes. Actually, really? Cannibal Corpse has worked with this Michigan artist, Vince Locke, for their entire career.
Okay.
And Vince Locke is also a comic artist, most well known for illustrating the graphic novel written by Matt Wagner called A History of Violence, which was made into a David Cronenberg movie.
Okay.
And starred Viggo Mortensen. And was also very brutally violent.
Oh, he also did something with Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he's had,
I guess there's a lot of skeletons in that.
Yeah, he's had various little comics gigs, and I think has done album artwork for some people. But yeah, Vince Locke, very talented illustrator.
Huh.
Very brutal dude. So
I like that there's kind of this consistency that seems to be there, where they're like, you know, we really like your art.
That was disgusting. Let's keep going.
That was so cool. Let's keep doing this.
So you might wonder, well, like, how does the band respond to all of this censorship and all this controversy over their music?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. Corpse Grinder, there's an interview with him where he just kind of compares the gore depicted on their artwork and in their lyrics as, you know, it's basically comparable to Fulci and Argento and all of these classic Italian,
kind of like Goya's Black Period.
Yeah,
Saturn
just
devouring his son.
That there's nothing exceptionally more violent and gory in Cannibal Corpse than there is anywhere else, most notably with, you know, Catholic history and depicting a crucified Christ. That might be a little bit of a stretch. I don't know if they're showing like a dead dude filleting a dead woman on a tomb and butchered babies in the background and things like that. But I do like some of the responses that they've had, and I thought I'd read a couple of quotes from members of Cannibal Corpse.
Okay.
To kind of put a bow on this, to tie it all up.
Uh-huh.
So this is Corpse Grinder again, George Corpse Grinder Fisher. He explains, we don't sing about politics. We don't sing about religion. all our songs are short stories that if anyone would choose, they could convert it into a horror movie. Really, that's all it is. We like gruesome, scary movies, and we want the lyrics to be like that. Yeah, it's about killing people, but it's not promoting it at all. Basically, these are fictional stories, and that's it. And anyone who gets upset about it is ridiculous.
Huh.
And he said this time and again, you know, it's just... He even says, our fans know it's just fun and it's ridiculous and that it's way too absurd.
Yeah, it seems like it's so over the top at points that it's like...
Exactly.
You know, there's a point when the over to the topness becomes like, this is just kind of crazy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I really like what their bassist, Alex Webster, has to say. Just very short and to the point. It's good to have anger music as a release. And that's...
Full stop.
That's it. Full stop. I love that quote because I think that that's really true and that kind of resonates with me being a fan of all this brutal music growing up.
Yeah.
Is at the end of the day, you can enjoy this music and decide, I'm not going to do unspeakable acts of violence to other people.
Yeah.
And this actually kind of helps me establish like, okay, there's a line I will not cross for sure.
Yeah.
But to have an outlet, especially when you're a teenager, you're really emotional and have all these things, to have an outlet where you're just listening to this brutal music and you actually have a community of people that you're sharing this music with.
This kind of intensity and energy.
Yes.
That, yeah. Kind of mirrors your internal turmoil in a way.
Yeah. And it is a release. It's something that is cathartic. Even recently, this week at work, you know, things get stressful as they do at any job.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a lot of death metal.
Uh-huh.
Partially just as research, but also this year, Obituary released a new album,
okay,
self-titled, and Morbid Angel released a new album called Kingdoms Disdained, which is incredible. So good. And it's funny because both of these bands have had turns where they kind of deviated from the sound they're known for and tried some things, but these...
Now, did they go, like, poppier, or what would
not
they...
Not poppier. Morbid Angel just had this weird... I think it was more production issues than songwriting issues.
And okay.
Obituary has been kind of all over the place with getting more brutal and kind of sounding like hardcore more than death metal.
Okay.
But both of these albums are great, and I think that they are very similar to previous releases from earlier in their catalog, and it kind of speaks to the timelessness of this music, too, that it is cathartic, it's enjoyable to listen to, it's a genre that has a dedicated following.
Yeah.
That's death metal. I love it. It was a lot of fun going through all of this again and digging up all of these weird tidbits.
You know, sometimes I listen to a Built to Spill song, and I go, wow, that's a lot of distortion that they're putting on their guitar there. That's really heavy.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wait, no, I'm going to listen to like a crossover thrash album. Like I'm going to listen to a Municipal Waste album or something like that.
Yeah.
And be like, wow, this is really heavy. And now I'm just like, oh, man. Yeah, I forgot about the one time I listened to Slayer and I was like, oh, this is not for me. Or I'm like listening to like a Creator or Overkill album, both of which put out new albums this year. And I think Creator's album is like 2 hours long.
2 hours?
It's super long.
Good Lord.
And I just went, wow, this is, I'm in way over my head here.
Sure.
But it is interesting. I didn't realize that Corpse Grinder was kind of this erudite in a way. And also really loved going to Target.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. These are real people too, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think it's easy to kind of slap this whole thing with like a pastiche of, these are just caricatures and they're just like insanely violent lunkheads. But really, right, they probably just watch a lot of like George Romero movies and Cronenberg and stuff like that and are really into zombies and like...
Right.
I think everyone at some point goes like, oh man, that's pretty cool, or like, that's pretty brutal.
Right.
And it's tough to listen to one of these songs and not at a certain point just hear like a tempo change or like a point when like the blast beats line up with the super fast guitar and just go, oh, that's sick.
Right. There's definitely, moments
when
you're listening to a lot of this. For sure.
Hell yeah.
Well, cool. I'm glad that this was maybe informative, at least fun. This is fun stuff, at least to me, despite the brutal subject matter. And, death metal is actually very relatively lighthearted, especially compared to black metal.
Black metal. I am
going to start some research on that. I've been listening to some bands and going back through. But yeah, that is a different animal entirely. Those are people who do not, especially the early Norwegian scene, they just did not even pretend with anything. They were like, no, we actually want to destroy people.
Yeah, like I feel like if I was at a mall and I saw a dude with a Cannibal Corpse t-shirt, I'd be like, ah, like, I know what your deal is. You're probably, like, pretty cool. And right. you're, like, pretty rowdy. If I saw a dude with, like, a Burzum t-shirt, I would be like, I'm going to walk to the other side of the hallway. And I know Burzum is even, like, that dude's, like, reformed black metal. Like,
yeah. Well, we can talk about that on a future episode. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. For educating me, Dorian.
Absolutely. Anytime.
And there you have it. That's Floridian Death Metal. Hey, thanks for listening. We really appreciate your guys' support. If you want to support us more, you can leave us a review on iTunes if you're on an Apple device. If you're not, just tell a friend about this podcast, subscribe, comment on the various outlets, all that good stuff. And tell us what you think. We love to hear episode suggestions and any feedback that you guys have. It's very welcome and we always love hearing from you. You can follow us on Twitter at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. And join our Facebook group. Just search for Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. Should be the first result that comes up. If you want to help us pay our hosting fees and help us improve our sound equipment, I know this episode was kind of old and the sound quality was not as good as we would like it to be. You can throw a little bit of cash our way with our Ko-Fi website. That's ko-fi.com/predeadboys. Consider throwing in just a little $3 tip. We'd really appreciate it. Our intro music is the song About Time by the band Brat Curse. Check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And thanks again for listening. We'll be back with a regular episode in 2 weeks. We'll see you then. Bye.
Once you get me into the toy section and there's clearance, then I bought right into it.
Bro, this is my favorite.
Every time I go to Target, every time I have to do this guy. Come on, don't do the same thing. Oh, man. He farts. And if you, you know, he's set wrong or something. Come on, dude.